our next song. I'm going to read a little bit from Luke's account of the lead up to Jesus' death. I'm going to be paraphrasing a bit as well. So Luke 23. Pilate called together the chief priests and rulers of the people and said to them, "You brought me this man Jesus as one who was inciting the people to rebellion. I've examined him and found no basis for your charges against him. Neither has King Herod. He has done nothing to deserve death. Therefore, I'll punish him and release him." But the whole crowd shouted, "Away with this man!" Wanting to release Jesus, Pilate appealed to them again two more times, saying, "There are no grounds for the death penalty." But they kept shouting and demanding, "Crucify him, crucify him." And their shouts prevailed. So we're going to have a look at the next part of Luke's account of Jesus' death. And Darren's going to read that for us. So that's looking at Luke chapter 23 from verse 32.
Two other men, both criminals, were also led out with him to be executed. When they came to the place called the Skull, they crucified him there, along with the criminals, one on his right, the other on his left. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." And they divided up his clothes by casting lots. The people stood watching, and the rulers even sneered at him. They said, "He saved others. Let him save himself if he is God's Messiah, the Chosen One." The soldiers also came up and mocked him. They offered him wine vinegar and said, "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." There was a written notice above him which read, "This is the King of the Jews." One of the criminals who hung there hurled insults at him. "Aren't you the Messiah? Save yourself and us." But the other criminal rebuked him. "Don't you fear God?" he said, since you are under the same sentence. "We are punished justly, for we are getting what our deeds deserve, but this man has done nothing wrong." Then he said, "Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom." Jesus answered him, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." It was now about noon, and darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. for the sun stopped shining. And the curtain of the temple was torn in two. Jesus called out with a loud voice, "Father, into your hands I commit my spirit." When he had said this, he breathed his last. The centurion, seeing what had happened, praised God and said, "Surely this was a righteous man." When all the people who had gathered to witness this sight saw what took place, they beat their breasts and went away. But all those who knew him, including the women who had followed him from Galilee, stood at a distance, watching these things.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to be with you this morning on this very, very special day of the year. Whether you're new with us or visiting, or a regular member with us even, it's great to have you here this morning. I hope you enjoy your time with us. My name is Mark. If we haven't met before, I'm on the staff team here at Trinity Church Modbury. One of my earliest life memories comes from art class when I was in reception at primary school, so when I was 5 years old. And our teacher asked the whole class to write our names on our work in blue texter if we were a boy and pink texter if we were a girl or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something that involved being able to tell the difference between two colours, which I couldn't do because I was colourblind. And so I had a 50-50 guess, got it wrong, wrote my name in pink or whatever it was, and the teacher, he was a bit of a bully. He had an absolute field day with it. For the rest of the lesson, he'd put on this falsetto voice when he talked to me and just go, "Ooh, Markelina, what a beautiful girl you are." And of course, the rest of the class got around it quite a bit, thought it was hilarious, and the fact that 3 decades later I can still remember it probably shows, doesn't it, the power of shame and humiliation behind that. But you know what? What I find way more painful to look back on is not getting humiliated by an insecure teacher. It's the shame of the things that I've said, the things that I've thought, the things that I've done that I know are wrong, things that I'd never share about up here, things that I'd never share anywhere with anyone. And we all know what it is to feel shame, don't we? Now, guilt and shame, they're connected, but they're kind of a little bit different. I'm not a psychologist, but the way I've heard it explained is that guilt is kind of connected to the action, and shame is more connected to the whole person. So guilt is saying, I did something bad. Shame goes a bit deeper than that. Shame is saying, I am bad. Brené Brown, you might be familiar with her. She's quite a well-known sociologist. She's done a lot of thinking and speaking into the whole space of shame. And she talks about how shame is a useless tool for social justice. It's useless for getting people to change or even for helping children to grow and to change. And why is that? Well, because she tells us shame corrodes the very part of us that believes we're capable of change. So in other words, shaming people, it's not going to bring about positive change. And yet our society loves to weaponize shame, doesn't it? So next time a politician does something wrong or a sports star makes some sort of controversial comment, you just watch the social media pile on that happens. Listen to how people try to just pile the shame on that person to bring them down. Perhaps partly because it lessens the sense of shame that the rest of us feel when we see someone else shamed in that way. Maybe you've had shame weaponized against you. Maybe you just know intensely and personally what it feels like to deal with shame. And so what do we do with shame? How do we deal with it? There are a few approaches that people tend to take. We can try to shift the narrative. We can try to focus on what's good about us and not think about the bad. We can try to forgive ourselves for past mistakes, to move on, to accept that I'm not that person anymore. Or we can deny the shame altogether. We can say, I didn't do anything wrong. I've got nothing to be ashamed about. And in certain contexts, each of those might be a very good approach to take. But what does the Bible give us? How does the Bible help us? Well, Good Friday shows us. It shows us how the cross can shape how we deal with our shame. And I'm thinking here, shame is a kind of a complex and wide-ranging thing. I'm thinking very much the shame of the things that we've said and thought and done that we know are wrong. So firstly, Good Friday, it points us to the shame of the cross. So the account of Jesus' death, which we read from Luke's gospel just a moment ago. Luke's gospel is like a biography that we have in the Bible of Jesus' lifetime. And what we saw was not just the physical pain of being crucified, though that's awful enough, but we see the shame as well. Crucifixion was a method of execution designed by the Romans and really designed to be as dehumanizing as possible. It was meant to rob someone, not just of their life, but of their dignity as well. So the person is whipped and beaten, nailed, naked to a cross that they've had to carry themselves to that location. And they very, very, very slowly die while being taunted by a crowd around them. And Luke describes for us how Jesus, after being paraded before the king and his soldiers, is crucified alongside two criminals. His clothes are divided up and he's mocked. The crowds and the soldiers hurl their insults at him. And the whole time he's innocent. He's innocent. Pilate, the Roman governor who orders the execution, he knows this man is innocent. The criminal on the cross next to him knows that Jesus has done nothing wrong. The centurion who watches him take his last breath knows this is a righteous man. In fact, Luke's entire account of Jesus' life makes it clear that he's done nothing wrong. And yet here he is, facing the shame of the cross. So is that all there is to Good Friday? Is it just an innocent man dying a shameful death at the hands of a powerful empire under the rule of a weak governor, spurred on by a hostile crowd, influenced by a malicious group of religious leaders? Is that all it is? Well, no, there's more to it. is what we see next, the truth of the cross, which is that the shame had a purpose. The shame had a purpose. Listen to how it's described in the New Testament book of Hebrews. This was a letter written about 30 years after Jesus died, which we've got in our Bibles today. It says, "The high priest carries the blood of animals into the most holy place as a sin offering, but the bodies are burned outside the camp. And so Jesus also suffered outside the city gates to make the people holy through his own blood." There's a lot going on there, but notice that word sin. Now, it's a bit of a loaded word. Sin, maybe we often think about sin as bad things that we say or do, like stealing or swearing or whatever. But it's actually deeper than that. It's deeper than that. It's about a heart issue that causes all these things. It's about our broken relationship with God. So God created humans to love him, to live for him. But people chose instead to reject God, to ignore him, to live life our way instead. We chose sin. And with sin comes shame. In the very beginning, when God created people, we read in the Bible that the first two humans, Adam and his wife Eve, were both naked and they felt no shame. There was nothing for people to be ashamed of. There was nothing to hide. But look what happens just a few verses later, after they've rejected God and chosen their own way instead. Then the eyes of both of them were opened and they realized they were naked. So they sewed fig leaves together and made coverings for themselves. All of a sudden, there's shame. There's self-consciousness. And what this means is that our experience of shame and guilt actually points to a deeper spiritual reality. Our guilt points to the reality that we do bad things. Things that go against the way that God made us to live. And our shame points to the reality that we are bad. We've rejected the good God who made us. And can you see what a massive problem then that sin is? It leaves everyone out of step with God, living as his enemies. And so then, what's the solution to sin? What's the solution? Well, it's not just to try harder. It's not just to try harder, be better, be a better person, do the right thing. Because we've seen sin goes deeper than that. It's deeper than our words and actions. It's in our hearts. Under the Jewish law, people would sacrifice animals to God to pay for their sins. But this wasn't enough to make them right with God. All it did was remind them what a big problem sin is. Something bigger was needed. And that's why Jesus came. It's why Jesus died. Just like the animal carcasses were taken out of the Israelite camp and burned after the sacrifices were made, they were just shown complete indignity in that way. In the same way, Jesus' body was taken out of the city and destroyed, crucified. But as that happened, his blood was able to do what the blood of all those animals wasn't able to do, to make people holy. At the cross, Jesus was bearing our shame, our disgrace, so that we could be pure and holy in God's sight. So that instead of seeing our sin and seeing our shame, God sees us as holy, with nothing to be ashamed of. In Luke's account of Jesus' death, there's a guy we meet called Barabbas. This guy was a criminal. He was about to be executed. And the Jews, they wanted to release him instead of Jesus. They were saying to Pilate, release Barabbas, kill Jesus instead. We don't know much about Barabbas except that he was a criminal and he should have been on that cross. He should have been the one that was enduring that shame. But he was spared it. Jesus bore it in his place. And it's the same for anybody who trusts in Jesus. We no longer carry the shame and guilt of our sin before God, because Jesus has borne it for us. And what that means is that our response to the cross matters. Our response to the cross matters. See, I reckon there are three possible responses as we look at the cross. And I want you to have a think about which one of these is most closely lined up with where you're at. So response number one is to say, the shame of my sin isn't bad enough that Jesus had to die for me like that. Okay, I'm not perfect, but it wouldn't take something this extreme for God to accept me. That's response number one. My shame isn't that bad. I mean, if that's you, I want you to imagine that what I've got in my hand here is a DVD of your life. It's your life on film. Everything you've said, everything you've thought, everything you've done, everything. We're going to play it right now. We're going to plug it into the computer somehow. We're going to play it on the big screen right now. How are you feeling? Because I'll tell you how I'd be feeling if it was my life. I'd be terrified. Absolutely terrified. If my whole life was being laid bare for everyone to see, that the shame would be too much. I wouldn't be able to look anyone here in the eye again after that. And if that's how we feel about equally flawed people knowing the worst about us, well, what about a completely perfect God seeing and knowing about it all? And that's when we realize that something big did need to be done about my shame. So then you got response number two, and that's really the exact opposite. It's saying that this isn't enough to deal with my shame. My shame is too much. This someone dying on the cross isn't enough. If only you knew the things I've done, the things I do, the things I think, the person that I am. That's response number two. So back in 2013, an African American woman walked into an upmarket handbag store in Zurich, Switzerland, and she saw a very fancy looking handbag, and she asked the lady who was working there to be able to have a look at this $38,000 US handbag, and the shop assistant said to her, "No, that's too expensive for you. That's too expensive for you." Now, the shop assistant clearly didn't watch a lot of daytime television, because that was the woman in the shop who was trying to buy the handbag. It was Oprah Winfrey, who earned about $100 million US that year. So as expensive as that handbag was, she could comfortably afford it. She could have bought everything in that shop. And in the same way, as overwhelming as our sin and our shame might feel, Jesus' death is enough to cover it. As bad as we might think we are, our badness, our brokenness just goes to show just how worthy Jesus is to pay the price for us, to make us right with God. And then we've got response number three, which is where we realize, yes, my sin and my shame does need something as extreme as the cross. And yes, Jesus' death is enough to deal with it. And we saw this response in our Bible reading, didn't we, from the thief who was being crucified next to Jesus. He knows he's getting what he deserves for his crimes. But he also realizes that the shame of crucifixion is nothing compared with the shame of appearing before God with his sins undealt with, facing God's punishment for the ways that he's rejected him. And he can't change anything. He can't just pluck the nails out and get down from the cross and live another 10 years of a good life to try and balance the ledger out in his life. And so he throws himself on Jesus' mercy. He says to him, "Jesus, remember me. Remember me when you come into your kingdom." And Jesus answers him, "Truly I tell you, today you will be with me in paradise." So despite his sin, despite his shame, this criminal is saved for eternity by trusting in Jesus. And this is the offer that Jesus holds out to everyone. Turn to me. Let me bear your sin. Let me bear your shame. Follow me. For some of us, that's a decision that you've already made, whether it was a year ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago. My hope and prayer is that for others of us here, it will be a decision that you do make one day. If you're here this morning, just visiting with a family or a friend, or just checking out what Easter is all about, if response number three, if that's not quite where you're at yet, we'd love to help you think things through and work out for yourself who Jesus is, whether our sin and shame really is the big deal that the Bible claims it to be, whether Jesus really can help us with it or not. I'd love you to take home one of these booklets that we've got at the back table. We've got copies of Luke's Gospel, which we've heard from this morning. It's one of the biographies of Jesus' life that we have in the Bible. There's also this little book. It's called Easter in Three Words, which tells the Easter story from just a bit of a different angle. The three words that kind of help us to understand Easter a bit more. I'm not going to tell you what the words are. You'll have to grab it and have a read for yourself. And we'd love to have you along in our Next Life course in a few weeks as well. That's an event that we run for anyone wanting to explore Christianity in a bit of a relaxed environment. You can come along, ask whatever questions you want, enjoy some food and drink, and yeah, just work out for yourself who you think Jesus is. Well, the wonderful news of Good Friday is that Jesus has dealt with our shame, and he's done that by going to the root cause, sin. Jesus takes the shame and the disgrace of our sin on the cross so that we don't have to carry it on the day that we come before God, and so that we can enjoy an eternity without shame. But for a short time now, though, to follow Jesus does mean bearing shame for him, bearing disgrace for him. We saw that Hebrews passage just earlier about Jesus' body being taken outside the camp. What it says next is, let us then go to him outside the camp, bearing the disgrace that he bore. For here we do not have an enduring city, but we are looking for the city that is to come. And so when we follow Jesus, we identify with him. And if you do that, people will think less of you at times. People will disagree with your views. People will think you're wrong at times, or stupid, or hateful. You will bear disgrace for Jesus if you follow him. So how do we deal with this? Well, we do it by fixing our eyes on Jesus. Jesus who scorned the shame of the cross. Jesus who wasn't ashamed to call us his brothers and sisters despite our sin. And we look forward to that enduring city to come. Being able to come to God holy and without any shame. Enjoying an eternity forever without shame that Jesus has secured for us by bearing the shame and disgrace of our sin on the cross. Let's pray. Jesus, thank you that you're not ashamed to call us brothers and sisters, that you endured the shame of the cross, the shame and disgrace of our sin, and you did that so that we could come to you, we could come to God holy and without shame. And we pray that we would be prepared to bear disgrace for you, knowing that you bore infinitely more for us. We ask that as we deal with our guilt and with our shame in a world that's broken by sin, that you would help us to fix our eyes on that city to come where our shame will be no more. Amen.